Yo, it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
So Jake Bentley chased and dropped at the 15-yard line. Roquan, the chef, Smith.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense. And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. So glad you're with me here on this Tuesday night. Open phone lines for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our telephone number. This hour we're going to hear from Darnell Mayberry from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts about the Bulls in the NBA draft coming up at the bottom of the hour. He has some things to say about the Golden State Warriors and the state of basketball. I want to get into Darnell about at 9:35 here on ESPN 1000. So glad that you are with me. For those of you that are big wrestling fans, SmackDown Live is over on the USA Network. So now it is time to turn to a man who knows his wrestling, was a longtime producer for the WWE on-air talent as well as Brother Love. I got a chance to talk to Bruce Prichard on the Under the Hood podcast. For those that missed it, here's the thoughts of Bruce Prichard, because Bruce is going to be in town at the House of Blues on Saturday night after the NXT show will take place over at the Allstate Arena. It'll be him and Conrad Thompson. They have a great podcast. If you're a wrestling fan, especially the old school WWE fan, you'll really enjoy Something to Wrestle with Bruce Prichard. He and Bruce and Conrad do a great job on that show. And we got a chance to talk to Bruce. One of the things I talked to him about is just his time in Chicago. What is his fondest memory of being here in the city of Chicago?
Oh my gosh. You know, just going, first of all, to the Allstate Arena. Is it still the Allstate Arena?
It is.
Oh, well, see, there you go. For me, it was always the Rosemont Horizon. But, you know, all these buildings, they change names so much. But the atmosphere there and the audience was always on fire. You had Madison Square Garden, and then you had Chicago. And Chicago was just pure heat, where they got into everything that you did, and it was a passionate audience. So for me, any time going to Chicago was an absolute blast, because we usually ate at Morton's out there in Rosemont, mm-hmm. and or the one downtown. But it was always just a fun crowd, and you knew that if you were going to do something and it was going to get over, and they bought it in Chicago, they were going to buy it everywhere.
Bruce, you know, the podcast business, I want to talk to you about just for a moment, because even with me working for ESPN Radio, as I have since August of 2005, you can see a shift in the atmosphere when it comes to radio versus audio. It's actually two different things. When it comes to podcasts, it's not radio. It's just long-form audio stories. And I want to know from you, did you have a favorite radio show, something that you listened to? Because clearly millions are listening to you and Conrad, but did you have something that you listened to daily that you really enjoyed on the radio side?
I never really did. I listened to, you know, radio was a ends to a means for me, from the standpoint of it was something to distract me while I drove. And when I was home, I would always just kind of keep the TV on for white noise. But got to the point where Steve Austin was doing his podcast, and I didn't know what the hell a podcast was. Mm-hmm. And my friend Jerry Briscoe told me, oh, you got to listen to this. And I started listening. And I started listening to Steve, and I started listening to Jericho's and stuff. And they are entertaining as hell. So I would just keep that on then for white noise in the background in my office. And that's how I kind of got into it. But Conrad Thompson, my partner, when he pitched me on a podcast, I laughed at him. I told him that would never happen. I had no interest in doing it. And if it wasn't for his persistence and him being able to convince me, because our format is out of sheer laziness on my part. I didn't want to chase down 52 guests a year.
Right.
And he was like, no, man, we're going to tell stories. Just tell your stories. And that's how it all started. And it took off. I don't get it, but I don't think I have to, but I enjoy the hell out of it.
No, it's great because I'm a fan of the podcast. I listen to every episode. I'm going to tell you my favorite in a moment. But here's the difference. The difference is, Bruce, the reason why it gets over and the reason why it's fun is because you're telling long-form stories uninterrupted with very few commercials. It's pretty much reads from BrucePritchard.com. Imagine you doing that show with 18 commercials an hour, like I have to deal with. So I think you're doing well in the podcast format.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun, and we get to, you know, we get to do our own thing, and part of doing our reads is being able to do them the way that we want to do them. And it's funny because one of our sponsors one time called us on a Tuesday and said, wow, we didn't get any kind of response off of the read. I said, do you want to know why? And they were like, why? I said, well, because you guys made us read it verbatim.
Right.
And we asked you, can we play with this and can we have fun? And you said, no. I said, I'm going to give you a make good. They didn't ask for a make good. I said, I'm going to give you a make good. And we did a little test on Facebook, and we blew them up, and they called back on Thursday before we even did the make good on Friday and said, what did you do? Because we had fun with it on Facebook, and then we had fun with it on the show, and people got into it. They didn't go through it. We try to make it fun. We try to make it a part of the show.
You're one of the best storytellers that I've heard. Is there anyone else around your family or in your business dealings that are really great storytellers?
You know, I think just growing up in the business, wrestlers, old-time wrestlers are great storytellers by nature. They, you know, we spent so much time in the car and you're stuck with each other. So you have time to reminisce and ask questions and tell stories to one another. So I sat under the learning tree of a lot of great old timers, and I had the fortune of being around people like Vince McMahon and Pat Patterson, and being the kid that I asked all those questions that I wanted to know the answers to, because I had them right there. I had them captive. And listening to the history and listening to what really happened from the horse's mouth, not through rumor and innuendo, what people think happened, but getting it directly from them and hearing those stories from them, both great storytellers, through the years, I think it just kind of developed. But I even go back as a kid and going through school, I always, you know, like to tell stories. I always like to cut promos, and I would attribute the majority of that to wrestling and people like Dusty Rhodes and Wahoo McDaniel that told great stories and promos.
Don't forget to, every Friday at noon, somethingtowrestle.com. That's where you can hear the podcast. If you've never heard Bruce and Conrad, please do so. Somethingtowrestle.com. It'll drop right into your device. And don't forget, they're going to be here in Chicago. Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson. They'll be at the House of Blues, only maybe two blocks away from our station here at ESPN Chicago. It'll take place Saturday, June 16th, House of Blues, 10 p.m. Go to BrucePritchard.com for tickets. My favorite episode of your podcast is the Houston episode, when you grew up in the business under Paul Bosch and Houston Wrestling. And the reason why is because I kept voting for that son of a bitch over and over again on the poll, and it never won. I kept trying, and finally we got that bonus episode. The reason why I enjoyed it is because it was about you, Bruce. It was about your connection to the business, how you got into it. Do you have a favorite out of your podcast?
That is my favorite, and for all the reasons you just said. We kept putting it on the poll. It lost miserably. It got down to the bonus poll where Conrad wanted No Holds Barred, and I was like, nobody cares, and it's not interesting. Well, nobody cares about Houston Wrestling, and No Holds Barred won 51% to 49%. And then we had asked them to do this survey for us, and so many people responded. We said, you know what, we're going to give you both. Houston Wrestling quadrupled what No Holds Barred did as far as downloads, and it's one of our most downloaded episodes ever on the show. And it blew me away because, you know, Conrad likes to prepare, and he likes to go through and have a format and know what the hell he's going to talk about. I'm completely the opposite. It's just hit me with it. If it's a show, I do my research. I go back and I watch the shows, and I do research. I do talk to people and get people to jog my memory. But with Houston, it was, man, just, you know, I'll go down a path and just pretend like we're sitting in the living room and ask me questions. He hated it because he wasn't prepared. He didn't know enough about it to know what to ask in his initial feeling. Once we got into it, we were just talking. That's what it became. We were just sitting there talking on the couch. And the stories flowed. But it was very personal to me, and it was the episode. It's my favorite just because, as you say, I got to tell my story a little bit. And those were the moments in my life that in many ways defined who I am today. And got me into the wrestling business.
Yeah, I watched a lot of those Houston episodes until you told me and told the audience that maybe it wasn't a good idea to support Bruce Starr, but I did it anyway. It was too late. I was already giving him like $8.99 to watch those Houston episodes because it was a monthly deal because I couldn't find it anywhere else. So I had a real great enjoyment of watching you in your early years and watching Bosch and just watching those the stories told in Houston wrestling. Can you give us an idea of what that was like on a weekly basis? Because outside of you being a ring announcer and also sometimes a bodyguard for Paul, because you're sitting there at ringside and they were trying to go up and give him an autograph while he was doing a play-by-play and you were kind of shooing the kids away because that crowd was so hyped. What was it like on a weekly basis for the talent to come in and the stories that were told there?
You know, it was my life, and it's funny because I tell my kids now who are 19 and they trying to figure out what they wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to do when I was 4 years old. So it was a lifestyle for me. When I did other jobs, it was to support my wrestling job and to support my wrestling habit, if you will. So I did everything. And I was sitting down next to Paul. I was the assistant director of the television show at the age of 12 years old. And learn how to time out a show and give cues every week. And it was a life lesson. I learned more as a kid on Friday nights than I did all week in school, because you learned about real life and you learned how to deal with people and the ins and outs and nuances of personalities and how to get what you want, I guess, and how to be a salesman in a lot of respects. But those were life lessons. Everything that I did in Houston when I started running the office and working with Paul on a daily basis was just how to get through life and how to make the most out of it and giving back and things like that you don't think of when you think of going to work. And it was school, it was work, it was life lessons, and it was everything. So I wouldn't trade it for anything.
You're not there on a daily basis as you once were with the WWE, but you are back with the WWE Network, and we want people to know that they can go to something else to wrestle with, which is on the WWE Network, where you can see video and the audio of something else to wrestle with you and Conrad. You're not there on a daily basis, but you do know about the inner workings of with what's going on with Vince in 2018. From what you know, is Vince any different than he was when you worked with him on a daily basis?
I don't think so. I think, you know, Vince, people always talk about Vince being out of touch. And I remember when I first met Vince in 1987 and some of the guys, the rap then was, oh my God, the kid's out of touch. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He has no clue. He had a couple good years, but he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. So I've been hearing that since 1987. Mm-hmm. And when you're around Vince and you have the opportunity to speak with him and be around him, he's so far. I mean, he's probably 15, 20 years down the line in what he's thinking. And yes, he's dealing in the now, but at the same time, he's dealing in the now as to where the hell he's going to be in 20 years and where the business is going to be and what he's looking for. So that's what people sometimes don't understand. I think that the guy's a genius. I've loved my time working with him, and he's been really good to me. Fired me twice, but at the same time, you know, I can look in the mirror on those and say, yeah, that's my fault. But I think that he's still got the genius in him. He's got more drive than anyone I've ever met in my life, has a work ethic that would be hard to match. I'll put him up against anybody in the world. And at 70-whatever years old he is, man, he can still hang with anybody and still go.
Bruce, are you going to Orlando to work with Major League Wrestling on BN Sports?
I am. I'm having a blast because it's getting to work with a lot of young guys, and it's a group that's, you know, they've got national television and they're busting their ass and trying to get out there and provide an alternative and be able to have a different product. So many people, it's funny when I listen to the audience sometimes, and the loudest people that complain are the ones that are always going to be there. Okay, because they like to complain. They like to hear themselves talk. But you have to cultivate new talent. And for those folks, for everybody that's looking for either more and or an alternative, I think that, you know, MLW is something that is going to give them an alternative, and they've got a fighting chance to actually give folks something else to watch. And if you're complaining about WWE or Impact or anything like that, then give it a shot and see if this is going to be your cup of tea, because it's a lot of young, hungry talent. And we've got a couple veterans sprinkled in there as well, but it's mainly a lot of really raw, young talent. And that's what I love most about the business, is being able to groom some of these young, hungry talent that just want to learn and be a part of the business.
Bruce, as always, we appreciate your time here in Chicago and look forward to you and Conrad making your way to the House of Blues.
All right, man. Thank you.
From your hood to J-Hood. I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted. I attract clientele. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you're with us. It's the Cubs. It's the Brewers. It's Jesse Rogers. Jess?
All right, Jay Hood, no change in the score since the last time we talked. 4-0 Milwaukee in the bottom of the seventh inning. Travis Shaw with all four RBIs coming in the first and third innings. 2-2-run doubles as Tyler Chatwood only lasted 5 innings. He only walked 2 guys, but he gave up 5 hits, so he was hit hard. But his control was a little bit better. 4 runs, 3 earned. It's been the Chase Anderson show for the Brewers. 1 hit over 7 shutout innings. This guy came in with an ERA over 4, but he has shut down the Cubs. He's done. The Brewers will go to their bullpen the rest of the way. Cubs trail 4-0, bottom 7. Back to you.
All right, Jesse, thank you. As the Cubs are having a hard time, but this is the Chatwood start, so it's one thing for Chatwood to have his issues, but it's another thing for the defense to just completely break down the infield for the Cubs. It's just not been a good night thus far, but again, there's still time for the Cubs to be able to win this particular game. But again, it's bottom of the seventh, as Jesse mentioned, and a 4-0 lead for the Brewers. As you're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app, I'd like to remind you that we have our Under the Hood podcast. For those of you that have that subscribe to podcasts, whether it's through Apple Pod, iTunes, whether it's Podcast Addict, whether it's TuneIn, the TuneIn app, don't forget to look for my name, Jonathan Hood, or look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. You can download it right to your device. You'll never miss an episode of our broadcast, whether it's special interviews or whether it is hourly shows that we do every night, hour by hour. The timestamps are there, right there, for the Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood podcast. So add that to your collection of podcasts if you're a podcast listener, especially third shifters that need some accompaniment and somebody to to keep you company, especially in the overnights, I'm here for you on those Under the Hood podcast. Glad that you're with me here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Let's go to The Athletic. A man who covers the NBA and the Bulls for The Athletic is Darnell Mayberry. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. DM is Jonathan Hood. Thanks so much for your time.
How you doing tonight, Jonathan?
How you doing?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. Enjoying this nice almost summer, officially.
It is. I've not talked to you in a while, and I want to get you on because here we go. You know, the NBA draft is right around the corner. We'll be covering it here on ESPN 1000. We're about 8 days away. I want to ask you about a tweet that you had that raised my eyebrow. The tweet that you had was, "Competitive balance is dead, and it died on July 4th, 2016. Is this good for anyone other than the Warriors and their fans? The league that I love the most sucks right now, absolutely sucks." Why you say that?
Well, I mean, let me just start by saying and explaining that I might have gone a little too far.
Uh-huh.
The foregone conclusion is more what I was speaking of. That absolutely sucks. The league as a whole does not suck. There is plenty of great young talent. There's plenty of veteran talent. There's great storylines. There's a lot of magnificent moments throughout the regular season. But when it gets to the playoffs, and even before that, I mean, you know that the 82-game season is largely pointless when you're going to have one team and one team only at the end that you can predict well in advance is going to be standing there holding the Larry O'Brien trophy. And for that reason, in my opinion, it absolutely sucks to know that this was predictable 2 years ago.
Well, I think that for someone like you that has been covering the league for a while and grew up in the same era that I did watching the NBA, that there's dynasties all over this league over the years. Whether we can go even just start with Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, with them winning three championships in a row, seeing the teams be able to establish themselves winning multiple championships. You know, when these things happen, the league doesn't suck then. It didn't suck with Bird and Magic and those teams dominating the 80s, the Bulls in the 90s. Do you believe that if a team wins more than a few championships, it gets too repetitive and it waters down the league?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Jonathan, because my tweet, I thought, was it took off. You know, I didn't think that it would take off the way that it did. I was just in that moment a fan who was on vacation watching, I guess that was Friday night, mm-hmm. watching the result, the predictable result, and being disappointed in it. And, you know, to your point, you know, it was not about dynasties. It's okay to have dynasties. You know, my point wasn't about dynasties. My point is about the outcome being such a foregone conclusion. Back on July 4th, 2016, we all knew that the Golden State Warriors were about to become a dynasty, and there was going to be no one who could stop them. LeBron James is the greatest player of this generation, and he just got swept by this juggernaut team that was unfairly put together. Was it within the rules? Absolutely. But when you add an MVP, however many times scoring champion Kevin Durant is, to that team, the reigning two-time MVP, a 73-win team, a team that had just lost in Game 7 of the Finals in 2016, won it all in 2015, you know, that to me is unfair, and it ruins competitive balance. It's okay to have a dynasty, but never before have I known the league to be such a foregone conclusion like it is now. And I think that's the big difference that perhaps was missing in my tweet. It's okay to have dynasties. I'm not okay with the league being a foregone conclusion 2, 3, 4 years in advance.
Darnell Mayberry from The Athletic joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I find it interesting, Darnell, that something that was said on Bill Simmons' podcast when he was with Jalen Rose, they kind of did a deep dive on Kevin Durant. I want to get your thoughts on this because when I heard it today, it was from a week ago. They were talking about Kevin Durant and saying that with him winning a championship, he thought that would be the elixir to his issues, meaning that, you know, the thing that was missing in his life was winning an NBA championship, and he's still brooding. He feels like he's still disrespected. As someone who covered Kevin Durant What do you think is going on in his mind now? He's a two-time NBA champion, but yet he has these phantom Twitter accounts, and he still doesn't seem the happy guy that he should be being an NBA champion on that team.
I think it's twofold. One, I think, first and foremost, it's a little unfair to Kevin Durant. You know, I think he does pay a little too much attention to what people are saying about him. And that comes across when, you know, we find out that he's got this burner account. He denied having a burner account, but said that he did indeed tweet it and was making a mistake. So, you know, he's got to get his story straight. He's kind of a confused young man at this point. But I do think it's a little unfair. I don't think he's just this miserable superstar that everyone's making him out to be now. I think these are just probably slices in his life where, you know, he might take something – and get offended by it or take offense to it, and then he fires off something, whether it's a tweet or a sort of a controversial quote, something like that. But I think for the most part, the guy is happy in life. I think he's living his best life, and he's happy with his decision. You know, with that being said, you know, there is a lot of vitriol and animosity towards Kevin Durant for the move that he made, and you know, I don't know if he felt like that was going to validate him as a person and as a player. I don't know what exactly he was looking for other than championships when he went to Golden State, but you know, to a certain segment, and I fully count myself in this segment of fans or people who will, you know, discredit a lot of what he's doing with Golden State, because like I said, it's just an unfair advantage that he completely tilted the league's competitive balance, and it's not a fair fight.
I know you still have your ear to the ground at Oklahoma City, so I do want to ask you, because you're the best person to ask about this. So, I mean, we have this LeBron speculation, and who knows what he's going to do, because it's up to him and his family. But I will ask you about the Thunder situation. With Russell Westbrook and that conglomerate with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, that just didn't work. That dog would not hunt, Darnell. They're just a one game better than they were last year, and it just looked clunky. Player. It didn't look comfortable, definitely for Melo, for a guy that's an ISO player in that offense. So what do you think that is going to be the fallout here in the offseason with Oklahoma City? How does that get better with Westbrook on the team?
You know, I thought when Durant left 2 years ago that they should have blown it up then. You know, Sam Presti, one of the best GMs in the league, people still want to, you know, hate on him for trading James Harden, you know, not amnestying Kendrick Perkins, losing Kevin Durant, all of these things. But he's one of the best GMs in the league, especially when you look at what he's done in that town, in that market. It's, you know, one of the smallest markets in the league. He doesn't have the luxuries that a Chicago has or L.A. or New York has with all the revenue coming in. But, you know, Sam Presti made magic happen, basically, in getting Paul George for Victor Oladipo, who was not an all-star at the time. And Domantas Sabonis, who was a, you know, questionable rookie, you know, who was inconsistent when he traded him. And then he got Carmelo Anthony for Enes Kanter and a second-round pick, which, by the way, came from the Bulls. But, you know, I think Sam Presti should have blown it up then. He made magic happen. He got two, you know, future Hall of Famers, certainly all-star caliber players, and Paul George and Melo to team with Russell Westbrook. It didn't work. You know, the only reason it would be a bad trade is if Paul George ends up going to L.A. or anywhere else. Then you gave away Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis for nothing. Now, how do they make it work? I think they probably should start over now as opposed to trying to catch lightning in the bottle again for the second year in a row, making the attempt at least. I think they should just probably try to start over and start over with Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams. Those are your two core pieces. You've got Andre Robertson who's coming back from that gruesome injury he sustained midway through the season last year. And you've got some young pieces like Jeremy Grant, if they can re-sign him. You know, he's a solid player on the come up, and he's going to be, I think, a good piece for them. Terrence Ferguson, you know, a very young player who was drafted 21st overall, I believe. So, you know, he's got some talent. I think they've got some pieces, but if they're continuing to try to catch lightning in the bottle to continue to try to compete with the Golden State Warriors, I think that's fool's goal. I don't think that's gonna ever happen. So maybe they just need to take a step back to take two steps forward, and that's what I expect them to do this year. I don't think that they're gonna go out and get, you know, a marquee free agent and just try to keep throwing these marquee guys with Russell Westbrook because it's just clearly not going to work.
Darnell, how does this thing work with the Bulls when it comes to what they need to look at in the offseason? I mean, the draft is right here. I keep hearing, and you need to confirm this for me because I don't know if this is true or not, about how the Bulls look at free agency. Now, look, you blew the team up and decided to trade Jimmy Butler. You get Lauri Markkanen out of it, and I don't know if that's – I think that's fine because one thing for sure about Markkanen, he looked unafraid. He didn't look like he's overwhelmed by the moment. Now we need to see him for a full complement of games with Dunn and LaVine and see how that works out. Do you think that the Bulls are trying to be a player for a B-list or C-list free agent here in the offseason? Because that means that you're not necessarily trying to tank again or just trying to stay young. Are they trying to get to the playoffs next year?
You know, if they do, I think it's going to become one of those things where it's organic and it happens naturally. I don't think that it's going to be a situation where they go after, you know, what of the B-list free agent is out there. I think that they're going to trust Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine to really grow and develop in their own time. And if they are good enough to make the playoffs, I think that they will be satisfied with that and use that as learning experience moving forward. But I don't think that they're going to go out there and make a big splash in free agency. I could be wrong, but you know, I'm going off everything that they've said, even publicly. So, you know, I think that they're going to come back with a team that looks similar, add these two first-round picks if they decide to keep both picks, you know, and go from there. To me, that would be the prudent thing to do. I don't see the point in trying to speed up this rebuild. Just go out there and let these guys grow organically, let them develop, and see what happens.
At seven, what is the best choice for the Bulls, you think, in the draft?
I mean, there's so many big men out there right now that I think it'll be hard to pass up one of the big men for, you know, a probably lesser talented wing player. You know, Mikal Bridges from Villanova is a guy who's gotten a lot of attention around the Bulls pick at seven. But, you know, if he's not the best player, I think they'd be foolish to just take him simply because they need a wing or simply because, you know, they have a hole at the three spot. So, you know, a lot of Bulls fans love Michael Porter Jr. You know, everyone realizes that. I have questions about whether his demeanor and his mentality fits with what they're trying to do. They've already got three players who need the ball. If you add in another one and Michael Porter Jr., you could have problems in that locker room for a quartet of guys who are 24 and younger. So to me, that would be playing with fire if you tried to add a guy like that. Now, it could be, you know, devil's advocate is Michael Porter Jr. could be the best player of the four, and then you get rid of everyone else who doesn't fit around him. That's the counter-argument. But I think with so many bigs at the top of this draft who are talented, you're talking Mo Bamba, you know, Wendell Carter Jr., those two guys who could be there at seven, I think it would be hard for the Bulls to pass up one of those guys, especially when you can get a wing player at 22 if they decide to keep that pick.
Two words for you, Darnell. Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse. If for those that have not seen this, the Raptors have promoted their assistant coach, Nick Nurse, to be the head coach of the Raptors, replacing a guy that was the coach of the year last year in Dwayne Casey. You know how bad that is, Darnell. You know how embarrassing that is. If the name of that new Toronto coach is not Jeff Van Gundy, Mark Jackson, making a trade for Doc Rivers or whatever else that would be more of a splash, you are replacing the coach of the year and Casey, the most winningest coach in Raptors history, with Nick Nurse. Really?
You know, yeah. You know, I will say to go the other way with it, not saying that I agree with it, but just another way of looking at it is, you could have gotten a retread, gone out and gotten a retread like a Mark Jackson or Jeff Van Gundy or whoever. But they're taking a chance on someone who hasn't been here before, and you just never know. That could be work out beautifully. It could be a disaster. But I do give them credit for, you know, not going out and getting a retread and trying the same old, same old. So I do think they deserve credit for that. With that being said, not saying I agree with it, and I do agree with you that, you know, Dwayne Casey, the winningest coach in franchise history, coach of the year, you know, who just guided that team, helped transformed that team in terms of their style of play, got the most out of their bench. That was one of the deepest teams in the league this year. He deserved better. But someone's head's got to roll. You know, head's got to roll when you flame out in the playoffs like they've consistently done. And unfortunately, you know, it's never the executives. It's always going to be the coaches more than the executives and the players. So, you know, I think that's just what happened. And Dwayne Casey was caught in the crossfire.
I really thought that that was a piece from the Onion at first, because the headline I saw was Nurse to be head coach for the Raptors. I'm like, really? And then you find it's Nick Nurse. It's like, man, look, the next head to roll will be Masai Ujiri if this does not work out. This is not.
It's got to be. I mean, it's got to be. Like I said, you know, they've done things to try to transform the way they play. Dwayne Casey had them playing great ball. They've got a new coach in now. You know, you got to give it a couple years, but if it's not working still, then I agree with you. Then Ujiri's got to be the one who goes.
All right, bro. I'll see you at the draft, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right, Jonathan. Thanks for having me, man.
It is Darnell Mayberry from TheAthletic.com with us here on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000. This hour is brought to you by Country Thunder, the premier four-day country festival happening July 19th through the 22nd in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin. Go to countrythunder.com now to buy your tickets. You're listening to Under the Hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Our thanks to you for listening. Our thanks to Stephen Barno, Bruce Pritchard, Jesse Rogers, Darnell Mayberry, Felix and Sean on the other side of the glass. Tomorrow we will have our NBA roundtable with Nick Friedell and Jesse Rogers. Nick Friedell and Chris Black, Jesse Rogers on the Cubs, Cheryl Burton from ABC7 in studio. She is now doing the 6 and 10 o'clock news, a new deal that she'll be doing after Kathy Brock steps down and retires. We'll talk to Cheryl Burton about that and so much more. Make sure that you're with us tomorrow, Wednesday, 7 to 10, right here. Don't forget the podcast, Under the Hood Podcast with Jonathan Hood. Download it into your device. That way you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening. We'll talk Wednesday at 7.
Jonathan Hood.
And I got what it takes to rock the mic right, yeah.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.